all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, November 18th. It is a just plain cold 16 degrees here on Lake Wissota with a wind chill of 6, and it is going to get snowier and colder over the weekend. So again, if deer hunting is in your plans for this weekend, please be super careful out there. Coming up this morning, Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fiddler will remind us that not all the votes have been counted yet or certified in all the races, and some of them are mighty close out there around the country. And of course, if Carolyn's here, given that she's our resident yacht rock aficionado, I'm sure we'll squeeze in time for a music quiz as well. We'll visit with Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, to help review media coverage of the post-election landscape and how they covered winners and losers and what kind of perspective they offered all of us in the wake of last Tuesday's voting. And UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher did such a nice job helping us preview weekend sports last Friday. We're going to do it again coming up at 7:50 today. We will review yesterday's round of state high school football championship scores and preview the games that will take place today in Divisions 1, 2, and 3. And yeah, I guess we'll talk about the Packers too if we must. If you want to email the show, send it to radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or if you want to give us a call, 715-388-7155. Aaron Somers is in the producer chair this morning. Aaron, we're both a little slower out of the gate today because of the Packer game last night, or maybe you have a better excuse than me.
No, not really. I chose not to watch it. Because my roommates and I were like, you know what? Let's watch something that'll cheer us up, because this is probably not going to. So we watched just bad reality TV. We watched Love Island.
I was going to say anything would be more cheerful than that. You know, just any horror movie would be more cheerful than watching what has happened to a once great football team and a once great quarterback, and watching, again, plays that were made either by Tennessee last night or by the Vikings in their game against the Bills on Sunday. We look at that and we go, hey, we used to be able to do those things. And now it's just nothing like it. I'll review it in a couple of minutes here. But I should note that we're going to have a question of the day. Yesterday, we asked you what should Republicans in the legislature do with a record $5 billion budget surplus. And overwhelmingly, you chose option A, which is Governor Evers has a good plan. The legislature should take it up. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, but at least we can say we asked you what we should do about the surplus. Today, we're going to talk about a report that another judge might be getting into the state Supreme Court race. And if so, it would mean that there are then probably 4 candidates, again, nothing's official yet, but of people who've announced or expressed interest. That would leave us with 2 conservative candidates, 2 progressive candidates for 1 seat on the state Supreme Court, which means another very expensive, very loud, probably nasty election campaign. And our question of the day is going to ask if this is the best we can do, or if we should copy what some other states are doing. And believe me, there are actually many different ways that states choose their state Supreme Court justices. So we'll review that, and then eventually we'll post something on our Facebook page. I don't know about our Twitter page, because to do the doom scrolling, it looks like, Twitter is going to come unplugged, unglued, unhinged at any point. People are saying their goodbyes as if, you know, all the nukes have been launched and we're just waiting for them to land, or waiting for the Titanic to sink, or whatever analogy you want to make. I'm not convinced. I mean, I still posted this morning. Today, I wished everybody a happy, my contractor says everything will be done by today, which happens to be the last day before gun deer season day, to all who celebrate, because that had happened to us. And and this was 2 years ago, and we laughed, and, you know, of course there was some work that still got done after Thanksgiving. And we've heard from a couple of different friends who are doing big remodel projects this year. And in both cases, like, oh, our contractors are going like crazy. You know, they're promised it's going to be done by today. And, you know, we just laughed like, oh, today or tomorrow, they said, of course. You mean Friday, the day before gun deer season when they all take off, right? And they laugh like, yeah. And, you know, in neither case is it going to be done. But it's good to have goals. And it's nothing, you know, no disrespect toward the contractors. Again, you try to get as much done as you can in during what would be work season before it becomes deer season and before it becomes cold and then the holiday season. So just be kind to anybody involved in construction today or tonight. You may not see them tonight. Some folks got an early start this morning. They're going to have a late night tonight to wrap up their projects and so that they can go out and play. So good luck to all the contractors and the homeowners. And again, just take a big cup of patience with you. When we come back after the break, we will go through a few of the details about the Packers' loss to Tennessee at Lambeau Field, and we'll talk a bit about those high school football playoffs, and then we'll get into the news about state Supreme Court candidates and some more headlines from around Wisconsin, and then later we will talk to Dan Schumacher at UW-Eau Claire about the weekend in sports, Carolyn Fiddler, and Mark Jacob, all coming up ahead yet on this Friday edition of Up North News. At just about 13 past the hour, we'll take a break and be back right after this here up north. That's just cruel to do to Packer fans this morning. What are you doing?
Yeah, I guess I didn't need to rub it in.
No, you really don't. It was.
It hurts me too.
However, it helped me go to bed earlier, which was good. That's nice when you at some point, whatever drive it was that the Packers, I think, three and outed, and you know, after Tennessee got to 27 points, and we said, okay, that's good. I'll catch any highlights when I wake up at 4 a.m. There were no highlights to catch at 4 a.m. There was no big comeback. The Packers were focused on trying to slow down Derrick Henry, a great running back for Tennessee. But it took so much effort to do that, that quarterback Ryan Tannehill was able to throw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns. And the Titans won in Green Bay last night, 27-17, which means as happy as we all were at breaking that five-game losing streak earlier this week against the Cowboys, the proper way to describe the team now is that the Packers have lost six of their last seven games. Now, Aaron Rodgers went 24 of 39 for 227 yards and two more touchdown passes to rookie Christian Watson, who has really started to impress, at least in these two games. I'm not going to lie. Before the Dallas game, I thought this might be a bust, that some people, they get to a certain level and they can't handle it, but Christian Watson appears to be on it. And who knows, maybe someday we'll look back at those first few games and, you know, say, can you believe that? Or he regresses. We'll see. But like I said, two more good looking touchdown passes last night. The Packers limited Derrick Henry to 87 yards and a touchdown on 28 carries. So an average of only about 3 yards a carry. But the Titans were still able to do pretty much whatever they wanted on offense. And Derrick Henry even got into the act by throwing a touchdown pass, a little 3 yard jump pass to Austin Hooper for a touchdown. And there was some other trickery where Tannehill looked like he was about to call a timeout. He kind of walks away and, you know, touches his helmet like he can't hear the call. And then the center hikes it to, I think, one of the running backs. And, you know, they get a big gain or a first down that they got. Again, creative stuff, whereas we were still working on the basics. The thing that would cause me the most grief would be another short doinky pass from Aaron Rodgers, a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I get that we don't have the wide receivers that we once had, but again, we're playing professional football. We're all at a professional level. And I just would like to see more attempts at deeper routes. If you've got a guy who apparently can still throw, you know, at least give that a shot. And if not, then I guess we just really have to perfect the running game. And we're still not quite there yet. The Titans rookie first round pick Treylon Burks had the best game of his young career, 7 catches for 111 yards, just a real gut punch one during the first half of the game. So the Packers now are on a long break because the Thursday night game kicked off this weekend of football action. And so the next game for the Packers is at the end of Thanksgiving weekend, a Sunday night game at Philadelphia. Sunday night, the 27th, and I'm pretty sure that's an NBC game that will have that one. Let's see. The Bucs are in Philadelphia themselves, and they are playing the Sixers. That's tonight at 6:30. As for the Milwaukee Brewers, the spring training schedule has been updated. So there we have that to go with. We can talk about the Brewers. Their spring training schedule has been updated to include they will face an opponent from the World Baseball Classic. They will face Great Britain on March 8th. And Team Great Britain will hold its training camp at American Family Fields of Phoenix. Now, I admittedly am not up to speed yet on this upcoming World Baseball Classic. What I've seen before, again, being the baseball fan here, I really like. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. I haven't spent 2 seconds thinking about the World Cup. And if you know, everybody else is welcome to follow it. And I'm sure I'll tune in from time to time. But the World Baseball Classic is the one that got my attention. And I will be looking forward to, you know, what happens on that. Over at in college basketball for the Badgers, the Badger men are on their, I don't know if they've left yet, but their next game isn't until next Wednesday in the Battle for Atlantis. So I assume they are Caribbean bound, and they will be playing Dayton next Wednesday afternoon. The Badger women are playing at Illinois State coming up this Sunday, and then they head to the Virgin Islands for a tournament where they will play games on Thanksgiving afternoon and then the following afternoon and Saturday afternoon. So they've got 3 games in a row scheduled for the Paradise Jam. Thanksgiving against Georgia, and then Friday against Seton Hall, and then Saturday against VCU. So there's a little update on sports action that is happening here. Oh no, I should get to the high school football. And again, we'll talk more about that with Dan Schumacher later, but I do want to list the games because there were some state champions that were crowned yesterday in the WIAA State High School Football Championships in Division 7. Congratulations to Eau Claire Regis beating Shiocton 41-7. And Stratford, perennial powerhouse in Division 6, defeated Mondovi 32-14. In Division 5, your state champion is La Crosse Aquinas defeating Mayville 22-14. And in Division 4, Columbus defeats Catholic Memorial 23-21. So the last 3 divisions, the biggest divisions, will have their games today, starting at 10 a.m. at Camp Randall with Division 3, West Salem versus Monroe. Division 2, the game is at 1 o'clock this afternoon, West Appear versus Kettle Moraine. And then the Division 1 game will be at 4 o'clock this afternoon, Mukwonago versus Kimberly for the wrap-up of the high school football season. We were noting, and I think I noted on the show yesterday, if not, then this is a good time to do it, that Supreme Court Justice candidate Dan Kelly was a little confused in putting up a tweet about his pending campaign for state Supreme Court. And it's a civics 101 thing that a Supreme Court candidate really shouldn't miss, especially somebody who actually served on the state Supreme Court at one point. Dan Kelly was appointed to the high court in 2016 by Scott Walker, but he then had to run for a full 4-year term and ask the voters for a full term. And the voters said no. In 2020, they chose progressive Jill Karofsky over Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly did not ride into the sunset for very long. He wants back on the court. And so he's going to run for the seat that's being vacated with the retirement of right-wing Justice Pat Rogensack. So when she steps down, that open seat that comes up next April is going to determine whether conservatives continue to hold a 4-3 majority on the state court, or if progressives win in April, a progressive justice would tilt the court 4-3 that way. And that opens the door to revisiting at least some of the damage done by the wrecking ball that's been, you know, more than 10 years of this Republican legislature and an increasingly politically active state Supreme Court. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, because as everybody knows, these state Supreme Court elections can go either way. They are spring elections. They are highly dependent on turnout. And when, as we found out when Justice Brian Hagedorn surprisingly won his seat a couple of years back, even some of the worst publicity about, you know, embracing some particular ugly issues won't be enough if a different block of voters shows up to the polls. So all that being said, Dan Kelly wants to get back up. And on Wednesday, he tweeted the following: "Our Constitution," which is in a lowercase c, should be uppercase, but that's just the journalist in me. "Our Constitution says, it is the government's duty to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I will not stand idly by while judicial activists try to use the court to make our communities less safe, our liberties less secure, and the pursuit of happiness less certain." Well, several people responded by questioning whether Kelly should have known that that language is not in the Constitution, but the Declaration of Independence. And regardless, Kelly also received blowback on what exactly constitutes judicial activism, given the U.S. Supreme Court's recent activity and Kelly's own participation in a series of quote-unquote election integrity events set up by conspiracy theorists questioning the 2020 presidential election. And then I would simply take issue with the wording here, where he says, "I will not stand idly by while judicial activists try to use the court to make our communities less safe, our liberties less secure, our pursuit of happiness less certain." Who out there has the goal to make our communities less safe? It's such a bad faith argument. And it's the argument that was made against Mandela Barnes as well, that, you know, somebody is actively trying to make our communities less safe. If you want to say a position will make our communities less safe, that's your right. But to ascribe it as a motive to a particular candidate or a person or a court is, well, it's just stupid. Nobody does that. And you frankly shouldn't be awarded for it. But in this political day and age, you know, that's what we have. That's what we face in our increasingly partisan, expensive, and bitter Supreme Court elections, which has me wondering if there isn't a better way. And if you look at or just Google up how our state Supreme Court seats decided, you might think that the map is just made up of two different colors, those who have elections and those who have appointments. It's far more complicated than that. It is that there are, you know, some states like Wisconsin that have nonpartisan elections for state Supreme Court justices. Wisconsin is one of 13 states that do that. Primarily the northern tier of states, from Wisconsin out to Washington State and Oregon, you know, Montana, Idaho, Nevada, North Dakota, and then a few in the south. But again, that's only one way of doing it. There's also variations on how it's done with the governor appointing or with the legislature playing a role. There are also flat-out partisan elections, which is probably where people think Wisconsin ought to be going, is let's just stop the, you know, the charade that it's a nonpartisan thing. The, you know, again, Dan Kelly showing up at events, you know, with other Trumpers trying to spread conspiracy theories about the election. Can we just call him a Republican already? Michael Gableman was, you know, as flat out Republican as it got, you know, before, during, and after his time on the Supreme Court. So, you know, can we just get rid of that illusion? And then there's others that use various forms of commissions. Either the state bar association puts up a commission and then sends a governor a list of nominees, or the governor controls the commission that the governor chooses from. And then there's hybrids on that. And, you know, there may or may not be the legislature's involvement. So somehow or another, I'm going to fit this all on one screen into a multiple choice, and that'll be our question of the day. And I'll let you know when that goes up on social media so you can decide, do we keep it as it is? Do we call it a partisan election? Or do we find a way to get a nonpartisan group involved in selecting qualified nominees? All right, let's take this break. More coming up in just a bit on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I'm not trying to rub it in that it's a little cold and a little snowy across parts of Wisconsin. I'm here instead to crow that we've got our Christmas cards just about ready to go. Some years you get lucky. Some years you prepare. And we managed to do that this time. And so I mean the person who had the courage to marry me, putting stamps on envelopes and I'm helping fold and stuff. I'm a little proud of myself. So the Christmas music gets to be played a little bit early, not just because of the snow and the cold, which for hunters will lead to near perfect conditions. And by near perfect, I mean, yeah, there'll be some tracking snow out there. There will be some periods where temps are in the 20s and 30s where hunters can sit comfortably. But it's also going to be cold, and there could also be an issue with wind. An AP story here quotes a deer program specialist at the state DNR saying that wind could affect deer movement and make things tougher for hunters. DNR officials told Wisconsin Public Radio they expect to sell 550,000 licenses this year. Last year, the agency sold 564,000. License sales have been trending down for more than 20 years, slipping about 1.5% a year since 2000, as older hunters age out of the sport faster than young people are taking it up. Then there's dwindling participation coupled with aging of the northern forests because deer prefer younger growth, and that's translated to fewer deer killed. Cars notwithstanding, of course. Last year, during the 9-day gun deer season, hunters took 182,000 deer, and that was down about 7% from 2020. The DNR estimates the deer herd has been increasing since the early 2000s and now stands at more than 1.5 million animals. So there are 1.5 million deer around Wisconsin. Hunters were able to find about 183,000 last year. I don't know how many got hit by cars, but depending on what roadside you're looking at, it would seem like just as many, if not more. And again, it's something that younger folks don't take up. I didn't, but that was more my fault. My dad certainly tried, but he happened to find, in his firstborn, a real wiggle worm, somebody who'd rather be reading a book, frankly, and who at one point tried to take a nap on a log. And of course, he had to shoot at a deer. The gunshot woke me up and I rolled off the log and face first into a mud puddle. And that was one of the last straws for me. The other was a very poorly executed drive that resulted in a couple of gunshots kicking up dirt near my feet and my saying, I don't think this is going to work for me anymore. And again, mistakes happen. You get misdirected and whatnot, but I'm pretty sure my dad stopped inviting and I stopped offering to come along.
Yeah, both of those things would definitely do it, especially the gunshots kicking up dirt at your feet. Like, that is one thing that should definitely never happen.
No, it shouldn't. And I take great pains to say that a lot of the guys that, you know, I hunted with as a kid, again, good folks, good hunters. It only takes, you know, one mistake. You think you're, you know, going at a 90 degree line to where the shooters are. And if you're not, things can go awry. And that's, you know, we hear about accidents every year. We want folks to be careful. We want folks to be safe, especially given that, you know, temps, you know, up here are going to hit 0 degrees tomorrow night. And of course, there will be the snow as well. So we need folks to be safe there. We need them to be safe on the roads. You know, the drinks can wait until you get back to, you know, deer camp, which I know people camp a lot less than they used to, but I know there's still some that are out there. And we just want everybody to, you know, to be good, have a good harvest, because again, that only helps my car insurance, the more successful that y'all are. We mentioned yesterday that Representative Janelle Branchon, co-chair or chair rather of the State Assembly Elections Committee, has been told by her fellow Republicans in the assembly she's no longer welcome to attend the private caucus meetings that assembly Republicans hold. In a letter from Bloomer Republican Rob Summerfield that was first obtained by WISP Politics, Branchon was told, quote, "Continual issues from the past have led our caucus to lose trust in you." Now, we already knew that Branchon endorsed and campaigned for Trump-backed Republican Adam Steen in an unsuccessful effort to unseat Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in the primary. And so, you know, to nobody's surprise, you know, she's on the outs with Voss. Voss is still there. And, you know, so a price must be paid. But there appears to be much more to the story. And I you know, I'm going to tell you about this story that was first kicked up by the conservative website Wisconsin Right Now. And then we'll have to determine if this is one of those things that, like in so many other cases, Republicans say, well, the rules don't really matter anyway, or if this actually leads to some kind of, you know, an investigation, you know, of the criminal sort, because there are accusations of money laundering and apparently audio recordings that bear that out. The site Wisconsin Right Now has a lengthy piece, and you know, they've, again, it's a conservative site, but like other things in the Republican Party, they've chosen sides. The party has a split right now. And, you know, they definitely were not thrilled. They were the ones that broke the story, if you will, about Tim Michaels and his Connecticut mansion and his penthouse condo in Manhattan and all the other records that they dug through. So they do some investigative reporting there. And, you know, pointed that out about, you know, their own fellow conservative who they thought, you know, might not be the strongest candidate once more people found out that this was a Connecticut businessman, not a Wisconsin business owner alone. So they have looked into this potential money laundering scheme that involves Janelle Branchon, Adam Steen, the Trump Political Action Committee, and that pillow guy from all the commercials. And the short version is that they apparently, if all this is true, used county Republican parties as improper conduits for campaign cash to flow from the Trump PAC and others to Steen to get around individual limits. Now, like everything else in involving political cash, the rules can be complicated, but let's boil it down this way. There is a limit on how much you can give a candidate in a particular race. At the state assembly level, it's $1,000. That's the most you can give a state assembly candidate. However, because of ways that Republicans have loosened the rules over the years, you can give a lot more than that to county parties. You can give to the state Republican Party, state Democratic Party. You can give to the Chippewa County Republican Party or the La Crosse County Democratic Party. You can give a lot of money to them. And the county parties in turn can give a lot more money to the candidates. But, and I know you're with me on this, you cannot give a lot of money to county parties and instruct them to give that big batch of money to a candidate because then you would be circumventing the individual limit on giving to a candidate. Is it easy to figure out? No. Is it impossible? No. Wisconsin right now in their article includes audio clips of Steen implicating Branchon and others, indicating exactly that kind of effort of using a particular party, especially, I want to say the, I've lost my article, Florence County party. And we will get to that. Oh, see, that's what happens when you don't scroll your window just right. And I want to get it to you. I'm going to read a bit from the story itself. Here we go. Okay. So it's about President Trump's Save America PAC and MyPillow's Mike Lindell and how they gave a combined $9,000 to a county party. Now, not a county party anywhere near where Robin Voss was being challenged by Adam Steen, but, you know, one of these northern county parties, Langley County, where you'd find Antigo, they have audio accounts about a September conversation between Adam Steen and the Langley County Republican chair, Terry Brand. And the article says that Brand and his vice chair were deeply involved in Steen's efforts to oust Voss in the primary. Starting in July and as recently as November 2nd, the story says, the Langlade County Republican Party directed a steady stream of money to Steen, funneling him at least $25,000 in cash and in-kind printing donations. On October 31st, Steen reported raising just over $133,000. About a fifth of that happened to come from the Langlade County Republican Party. And those weren't the other only big donations. The article talks about a couple of other big donors who maxed out. And then the article points out that there are these limits on what you can give to an individual and that you can't circumvent. But in one case involving the Chippewa County Republican Party, they have a photo of a document that notes right there from Trump's Save America PAC on August 31st, a $5,000 donation. And next to it is the handwritten phrase, designated money. And there was quite a kerfuffle in the Chippewa County Republican Party about whether this could be done or not, and how, you know, Janelle Branchon and others are implicated as saying that, you know, yes, this can be done, either because they're confused about the rules on county parties giving to candidates, or they're disregarding them and saying, basically thinking, you know, everybody does that. And so the, you know, the Wisconsin Right Now article notes that the Save America PAC from Trump has dispersed more than $68 million over the year. And the Wisconsin County party donations are among only 41 disbursements in that category by Save America. You know, some of them go to big ticket places, but there is no other place in the country where the Save America PAC is donating to county Republican parties, much less supporting a little-known write-in candidate who's trying to unseat a fellow Republican. Now, Adam Steen came mighty close by the time all this money was spent down in that Racine County area district, but Steen failed in his effort to oust Voss in the primary, losing by only 260 votes. And so then Steen turned right around and announced that he was running as write-in in November, and that didn't take either. And so, you know, Voss is there, and now, no doubt, taking note of this Wisconsin Right Now article piece, where, again, the Langlade County Chair, Terry Brand, is talking to Adam Steen in a recording, and Brand tells Steen, when it comes to how to pay for a direct mail campaign, quote, "We will worry about this $5,000 by identifying who that other county party is going to be that is going to wash that money for Save America." Oh, I mean, wash that money. Talk about the virtual definition of money laundering is where this tends to be. So it leads to wrap things up here to this question. It appears there's a lot of material to work with here. Will Christopher Schmalling, the Racine County Sheriff, who has called for criminal charges to be brought against the Democratic members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission for trying to help nursing home residents vote during a pandemic, will the sheriff there do the job of now investigating how somebody in his county might have been involved in criminal campaign money laundering? I'm not going to hold my breath, but the question should be out there. Back with more after this. You're up north. Well, if it's 6:50 on a Friday and you're hearing Yacht Rock, it's normally when we would talk to Carolyn Fiddler. Haven't seen her yet, and she might be on the kind of post-election break that I was just on. So we'll see if she dips in here or not, because her Slack notes has a little palm tree next to it. So we'll see. But she would if she were here. Love to tell us, and who knows, that might be her calling in right now. She would have loved to have heard Poco with Heart of the Night, which the group Poco on this day in 1968 made their debut at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. That, of course, was Randy Meisner, Jim Messina, Richard Fury. They changed their name from Pogo to Poco to avoid legal action because of, you know, Pogo, the name of the famous comic strip. Let's see, 1978 we'll go to next, where Billy Joel's album 52nd Street hit number one, stayed there for 8 weeks with singles like Big Shot. And then we'll move up to 1985, where it's funny how LL Cool J now seems like this, you know, elder statesman of rap and music and acting and everything. Hard to believe that we have to go back to 1985, 37 years ago, that LL Cool J released his debut album, Radio. It was the first album ever issued on Def Jam Records. It went platinum and includes the single Rock the Bells. I've got one music birthday of note. Kim Wilde, who had that remake of The Supremes, Keep Me Hanging On. She is 62 years old today, born this day in 1960, Kim Wilde. Speaking of women like her, Susan B. Anthony and 14 other women were arrested for voting illegally in the U.S. presidential election of 1872. So on this day in 1872, some women tried to vote, and they were arrested for voting illegally, which, you know, was the state's 1849 abortion ban in Wisconsin had been written 23 years earlier, which tells you how women had no representation when it came to this issue. And when women tried to have representation 23 years later in 1872 in another state, they were arrested. Then fast forward to 1910, where in a campaign for women's voting rights, hundreds of suffragettes marching to the British Parliament in London were beaten by police. The newspaper attention embarrassed the authorities, and the march was dubbed Black Friday from this day in 1910. It was in 1978, the Jonestown Massacre in Guyana, Jim Jones and the People's Temple. Again, those of us old enough to remember it, we're just stunned, stupefied that 918 lives would be lost, 909 in the compound, more than 270 children, you know, forced to drink this poisonous Kool-Aid. And it all happened shortly after A congressman, Leo Ryan, was murdered by members of the People's Temple as he went to investigate the allegations that this was a cult. Just a very dark day. And finally, this is the anniversary of NAFTA. On this day in 1993, the North American Free Trade Agreement was approved by the House of Representatives. So all that from this day in music and history. Fred Prehn is the embattled former chair of the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board. He's the holdover from the Scott Walker era. His term is long since gone, but after conspiring with Republican legislators and with Scott Walker and others, he has used essentially a loophole in the law to claim that he can stay on the board because the Republican-led Wisconsin State Senate has refused to nominate or to confirm the nomination of Fred Prehn's replacement, who was nominated by Governor Tony Evers, even though Evers is nearing the end of his term in a clear abuse of power by Republicans in the legislature. Well, now an environmental law center, according to the story from Wisconsin Public Radio, wants a court to find that Prehn violated the state open records law by withholding or delaying the release of text messages about his decision to stay on the board. A Dane County judge heard oral arguments on Wednesday in the suit that was filed by Midwest Environmental Advocates against Prehn. The group had sued him last year to compel him to turn over records after discovering texts about his decision to remain on the board past the end of his term. Initially, according to the Midwest Environmental Advocates attorney, they were told that no such records existed, but instead, as it turns out, dozens of communications were withheld and found elsewhere. Now, again, he is refusing calls to resign, and it's unclear to this point still whether the Republican Senate, when they finally come back to work in January, will grow up and finally approve all the remaining 100 or so nominees from Governor Tony Evers. But if they don't, I mean, this court case will go on. Again, we'll probably learn more about Prehn seeking advice from state senators, from Walker, from conservative lobbyists, from then-gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clefish, the former lieutenant governor. In one text, Prehn had written, "I'll see if I can hang on till Becky gets in." And of course, if you know, Clefish or Tim Michaels had won the governorship, all of the, you know, Scott Walker appointees who have been refusing to leave their various posts would just get to stay there, or new Republicans would take their place, and eventually, you know, essentially pulling a Merrick Garland. You know, what Mitch McConnell did to that Supreme Court seat that they stole. They have literally stolen this post to keep the Natural Resources Board with a conservative majority, despite the will of the voters in 2018, you know, in electing the governor. Now, this is being heard by Dane County Circuit Judge Everett Mitchell, who is one of the two progressive candidates I've talked about for state Supreme Court. And he said that he would release a final decision in the case shortly. The texts that have been revealed so far prompted a fellow Natural Resources Board member to call on Prehn to reconsider his decision to stay on the board. And last year, Attorney General Josh Call filed a lawsuit seeking to remove Prehn, but it was dismissed by another Dane County judge. And then when Call appealed to the state Supreme Court, the conservative majority ruled that Prehn can remain on the board indefinitely, which again only highlights the high stakes involved in next April's election for a seat on the state Supreme Court, and whether, you know, sanity and normal behavior will once again rule the day in Wisconsin. Take a break and have more in our next hour. This is Up North News Radio.